because my approach is every day there's a blank canvas, and you never know that this may be the day that you might create the best work of your entire career. I've been painting for over 40 years, but today might be that one painting that will separate me from the field. So it's a privilege and it's a unique opportunity to do it full time.
Welcome to the Honor It All podcast. I'm Honor Garrett, your host, and we're here to honor all that is good in the world. Each podcast, I interview top professionals around the globe who are making a difference, impacting lives, and creating positive change. My passion is to inspire women to thrive and build a life and legacy they love no matter what their age. Today, I have the honor to talk with William Mangum, a world-renowned artist who has created over 4,000 original paintings from around the world, 11 books featuring his art, and 2 documentaries celebrating his and my beloved state of North Carolina. Bill has also been the official artist for Pebble Beach, Pinehurst Resort, the Masters, as well as the Men and Women's U.S. Open. But Bill is most grateful for his opportunity to use his gifts to support the homeless and those in need with his annual honor card, love the name, program of 35 years, which has generated over $10.5 million to aid those struggling. I met William in person last week, and I'm so excited for you to meet him as well. Welcome, Bill. How are you?
I'm doing well. Honor, it's a pleasure. I look forward to sharing with you today.
Well, let's dive in. The pleasure is mine, and you are a very accomplished artist, but we all start somewhere. So can you share a pivotal moment from your childhood that solidified your passion for art?
Well, yes, it's easy enough to recall that poignant opportunity. It actually began in the third grade of all things. My mother, unfortunately, had a stroke when I was 8 years old. I was picked up in the middle of the night at a naval base where my dad was in the Navy. And I was brought down to a little country hollow called Mamers, North Carolina. And as you can imagine, lots of insecurities were swirling about. But my teacher was most impressed with my crayon drawings, and she entered one of those in the North Carolina State Fair. Lo and behold, it won a big blue ribbon, and it gave me the confidence to use that gift at the time to really not only entertain myself, but to be uniquely different. So that's where it all began.
And then, of course, it continued. How did you decide, this is what I want to do for my career?
Well, art for me, all during my childhood, was a tool to really use as extra credit. I was a terrible student academically. And a lot of that was because of just the background and the challenges of my childhood. But it was once I arrived, I worked my way through school, and I ultimately went to University of North Carolina at Greensboro, and I was an art major. But not having much money my senior year, I decided to do a painting for my mom for Christmas. So I went to a local dime store, and I bought a 59-cent tray of watercolors. The price was right. I had never painted in watercolors before, but I pulled out a sheet of drawing paper that evening, and I did my very first painting. I was so impressed with it, went back and I bought a $2.98 frame. I wrapped it up and gave it to my mom for Christmas. And when she unfolded it the next morning, she was mesmerized. And she said, Billy, you need to do more. And I said, Mom, I think I have finally found a medium that is speaking to me. So I went back to school. I took my life savings, $4.98, and I went to a local art supply store. I bought a set of Grumbacher watercolors, and I began to teach myself how to paint in this medium. While I was working my way through school, I was at the student union, and one of the deans saw me painting, and he said, Bill, this is really fabulous. He said, would you like to be our artist in residence? And I did not know what that meant, but it was an opportunity to have a show, and they would pay me He said he'd pay me $75 for the weekend to entertain parents during freshman orientation. So I borrowed $300 from my brother. I did 10 paintings in 8 weeks, and I sold every one of them. And this is when I knew I would pursue watercolors and art for a livelihood.
Well, you're known for your beautiful landscapes. Why did you go that route? Is it just you have a love for nature?
Well, there's something very forgiving about doing landscapes. Honestly, once it's your own impersonation of it, or interpretation, I'm sorry. And the second thing is, when people would look at my paintings, they would assume that's exactly what I saw, because they were very vivid and very realistic. But what they did not take into consideration was the artistic license of picking up and moving things, or changing the sky, or different atmosphere, different seasons. And for me, North Carolina was and is an artist paradise. We are so blessed to have three distinct topographies: mountains, Piedmont, and coast. And when you compound that with the four unique seasons, it really sets this state apart. So my backyard was the natural habitat, I guess, for my creations. And then over the years, as I began to study other watercolors, it was a medium that allowed you to take it out into the field. And I could do studies. I could do these marvelous quick field studies. And then I bring it back to the studio, and I would raise the bar and create some really pretty significant signature artwork.
Have there been moments in your career that you've been doing these beautiful works of art in your landscapes where you've actually needed to pivot or reinvent yourself? I've noticed you've evolved from breathtaking landscapes to now gorgeous palettes of abstract work. How did you navigate that transition?
Well, very good question. It was actually 10 years this season that I was invited to come on board with a furniture manufacturer by the name of Klausner. And as they were reinventing the company, they recognized that, number one, they had to create a really good product, which they did, but they were looking for an authentic story to come along and help them project their brand. And art was the perfect conduit for that. So I almost became like the poster child. And using my state of North Carolina, we did these marvelous home collections, artist-inspired home collections, based on the themes of my state. They would be like Blue Ridge or Southern Pines or Coastal Breeze. And then as we began to grow the collections, the fifth collection, we wanted to do a contemporary bent. So the question was, Bill, can you create art that will complement this? And I said, well, of course I can. Of course. Well, little did I realize that I would have to change mediums. I had created thousands of watercolors, but to create large work would demand a different medium. That was acrylics. So as I began to lean into that, I started painting these contemporary works, but with the idea that I would approach them like I did watercolors. And it was an absolute disaster. I flunked, I failed. And my associate, thank goodness she was going out of the country, so I was just paralyzed. But I had to teach myself. I had become an amateur once again and start all over. And it was really a godsend. It was a blessing to be able to set aside a livelihood that I was very comfortable with, but now to transition into a different medium. And I became a kid all over again. And it allowed me to look at elements of my landscape and take the textures and just really, like, under the microscope, reinvent all these beautiful abstract paintings that I've had great success with.
So you were able to take a love you have and really create a whole different appreciation for it.
I know I have. And people have different love affairs with art. Some love the idea of celebrating places that they've been. And so when I would do paintings for the Men's and Women's U.S. Open, for example, at different locales, they loved to celebrate the backdrop of that. But at the same time, there are a lot of people that have very contemporary homes that demand paintings that are 8 feet tall. Watercolors would never lend itself to that. So it allowed me to really just reinvent myself and experiment. And today I paint exclusively in acrylics. I could paint in watercolors, but I have a new love affair and I am quite enamored with it.
That's awesome. Well, I try to help women that are in their 40s, 50s, and 60s embrace new adventures in life to continue to learn and to evolve. My motto is, you're never too old and it's never too late. As long as I have a breath, I have a mission. And on top of art, you've started to grow your speaking career alongside your art career. Can you elaborate on how that evolved?
Well, yes, I've always enjoyed sharing what I create. And there is a quality of being an artist that anybody really can pick up. When you step back, all you need is a 59-cent tray of watercolors or a 2H pencil, and you too can call yourself an artist. I remember early in my career when people would ask me, you had a cocktail party and you break the ice and they say, what do you do for a living? I said, well, I'm an artist. They said, yeah, I know, but what do you do for a living? And it was after really, it took 10 years to see enough breadth of my work. But today I try to recall and say, I'm a professional artist. Right. And that really separates it because my approach is every day, there's a blank canvas and you never know that this may be the day that you might create the best work of your entire career. I've been painting for over 40 years, but today might be that one painting that will separate me from the field. So it's a privilege and it's a unique opportunity to do it full time.
You've started to do some keynote speaking. How have you used your art as a metaphor for life, or how you can share your message and inspire people?
Well, thanks for that. Art can be a very intimidating field to be in. A lot of people have insecurities about it, unless maybe it is representational work and it's very identifiable. So when I had a large gallery in the past, making people comfortable and coming in was always quite entertaining. But then to show them how you create the work also breaks down unique barriers. So in my keynote speaking, as I've come alongside companies and I've helped them celebrate their brand through my art, it makes it very relational. And that's the one thing that I always want to do was to be very approachable because people say, oh, you got such a unique gift. Well, at first, I did not appreciate that gift. I took it for granted because it came so elementary through a very inexpensive tray of watercolors. But over time, as I began to grow, I had meteoric success. But within 3 years, I wound up having to declare a straight bankruptcy. And I was humiliated and I was humbled through that process. So it gave me great perspective on where that talent came from. Good Lord blessed me with it, and it gave me a privilege to utilize it in a unique fashion. So as I recognize that and I use perspective as a tool in life, it's about balance. You know, we can get so carried away with our strengths and notoriety or fame or maybe even a little bit of fortune that we forget about where we came from. When I was raised by my Aunt Kate as a child, she took care of me. That was one of the things that resonated with me. She would always say, Billy, remember where you came from and how it used to be. And so often we lose our perspective and we're always striving, but we don't reflect on that history. Yeah. So it's been a great tool and a strength, and I try to share that message on the stage with many folks, not only through my work, but through my own personal experiences.
We're always striving to be better, and we don't think we're good enough. We need this, we need that. And yet, we're going to get to that place better and faster if we can just be grateful in the present moment and appreciate exactly what we have. But we all struggle with periods of doubt and negative self-talk. How have you managed to navigate through periods of doubt, really to ensure that it didn't stifle your creativity or hinder your success?
Well, that is a great question. I'm very fortunate, and being a professional artist, you have to have a multitude of skill sets, I really believe. Now, there are rare individuals, rare artists that come across a benefactor, or they have a dealer that represents them, and they can simply take everything they create and they blow it up and make them into superstars. I have yet to have anybody ask me to do that. So in the interim, I'm doing it myself. And I've got a very talented associate, Joy Ross, that's been with me for many years, that has helped elevate our brand. But to rely just on one talent, and that would be just painting, you're exponentially pulling the rug out from underneath yourself if you don't continue to educate and use other tools. And with that, I mean, is can you find a way to leverage your artwork in a variety of manners? So being resourceful and licensing it or publishing your work is equivalent to like a musician who's great talent and you perform live and you have these wonderful concerts and people come, but it's a dead end unless you can capitalize on it and make a record. So with my art, it was when I began to publish my work that I was able to get not only thousands of collectors, but tens of thousands of collectors. And particularly when you had an international publisher, and we had two that did my work for 15 years. So as you would travel around the world, I would have friends that would be in a little bistro in France, and all of a sudden they're looking over their shoulder and go, oh my gosh, that's Bill Mangum's art. So that's quite a compliment.
Oh, that's so satisfying. Well, you're obviously very resourceful. And I was going to ask you, because you're an author, a designer, a speaker, a businessman, a philanthropist. Most people hope to accomplish just one of these areas. What was that secret to have such a diversified success? And I think you might have just answered it, but is it your diversity or your resourcefulness?
Well, I think all of those talents really kind of build upon one another over time as you seize opportunities that come your way. I was into my career more than 10 years before I did my first book, and it was called North Carolina Beautiful. No, Behold the Beauty. There's so many books I got to remember.
There are a lot of them. They're great, though.
Thank you. But I knew that I needed to align myself. I use this acronym called the Art of Doing Business, or the Art of Entrepreneurship. ART, A-R-T. If you can align yourself, if you can come along and tag along a name brand, somebody that's already recognizable, it helps to jumpstart your career. So by aligning yourself, I use three really iconic news anchors in North Carolina to do my first book. And so Lee Kinert here in the Piedmont, Charlie Gatti in Raleigh, and then CJ Underwood in Charlotte. And from their stories, I melded this collection of original paintings and we presented it before the public. Well, I had a little bit of a following. They had major following. And then aligning myself with them quickly allowed me to ride their coattails, be on TV, do exponential other programs. And so those things began to grow and turn into a 32-layer cake.
Wow. Well, so what advice would you give someone wanting to use their skills and make a positive impact in the world? And maybe they're my age and they're like, am I too old to start something? What would you tell them? How would you encourage those people?
I'm in the autumn of my career. You know, I certainly could retire at my juncture of life. And I've been fortunate enough to sell enough to give me that posture. But there is still a yearning to share what you have gleaned from the harvest and to hopefully inspire others, whether it's artists or young business people or entrepreneurs, about perspective. And that there'll be times when you have wonderful meteoric success and you celebrate that, but if you are content in that moment, then game is over. And joy, my associate would say, you know, that is probably the biggest asset that I have. I do love what I do, but I always see windows of opportunity to be even better and to grow from that. We're so fortunate. When I think about when I was in school and you would go to the library, if you even know what a library is anymore, and you would glean things from Encyclopedia Britannica's, this 20-volume set. That was the world that was laid out before you. And today, we have this. Are you kidding me?
I know.
If I had to start my career all over again 40 years ago, I don't know where I would be, because I think I could have blown it up even beyond measure. So there's so much access if you will chase it. Mm-hmm. So every morning when I wake up to jumpstart my day, you know, I might be aching a little bit or sore from the workout the day before, whatever. But I have about five things that I lean into that help jumpstart my career. Actually, one of them led to a collaboration on a book. His name is Ralph Marston. And so every morning, 6 days a week, he sends out a daily inspiring prose. And it's a great kick in the pants. We're left up to our own vices. If you turn on the news first thing in the morning, you might as well just crawl back in bed and pull the covers over your head, because that's the worst way to start your day. Mm-hmm. Find something that's uplifting. Find somebody that inspires you, that you can grow from. So that's been a huge part of my keeping the canvas with some paint on it, so to speak.
That's great. And I truly believe that if I'm still here, I still have work to do, right? The good Lord's got something for me to do if I'm still here. I really think it's important to, and you mentioned aligning yourself with brands, but even more importantly, without the relationships you've made, where would you be?
It is huge. Yeah. I mean, I have not a close friend, but a friend, Nito Quibane, who is a very inspiring individual, president of High Point University. And he is a mentor on the side. I just step back and look at his contributions and how he has surrounded himself with personalities that are exponential. There's no telling how that all comes about. All you have to do is ask.
Right.
Worst thing they can say is, "I'm sorry, I'm too busy," or "I'll get back to you." Well, then, okay. Yeah. You don't hear, ask again. Because a lot of that is just a desire. We're all busy people, and I get lots of ask, but before we meet, one of the things that I ask of these people, I'm more than happy to meet with you. I'm more than happy to share and try to answer your questions. But give me 10 questions. Mm-hmm. I want you to write them down and I want you to bring them. Because if you don't, to be in the moment, there's too much distraction. So let's be poignant with the time.
I know.
See if I can contribute.
Your philanthropic work through your art is so impressive. Can you tell me more about the honor card and how it evolved and why you called it the honor card, since it's my name?
Yes, well, you weren't born quite yet, but the good Lord works in mysterious ways. And I had come through my bankruptcy and I had that humiliation and I recognized that my gift was given from above. But one morning I was having breakfast with a dear friend and I saw this disheveled guy behind him in a Hardee's restaurant. And as we looked at one another, we kind of acknowledged, you nod and he nod. And when we left the restaurant, he approached me for some money. And like most people, I wasn't comfortable giving him money. But I asked him, I said, "Are you hungry?" And he said, "Yes." I said, "Well, come on in. I'll buy you breakfast." Good Samaritan moment. And I had a little time on my hands and I learned his background. I said, "I've heard of this place called Greensboro Urban Ministry. They have a shelter. Would you like me to take you there? you can stay. He said, that'd be great. So as we pulled up and I dropped him off, I got out of the car and I reached into my back pocket and I grabbed my wallet. And I sure Mike Saavedra was his name, felt like I was going to give him $5 or $10 and wish him well. But what I did was I gave him my business card. And I said, why don't you call me in a couple of days and let me know how you're doing? And he did.
Wow.
And that turned into a 3-year friendship where ultimately I became Mike Saavedra's caretaker. Because not only was Michael homeless, he was mentally ill. He was diagnosed as a paranoid schizophrenic at the age of 15, and he had been wandering the country for 20 years. So that relationship cracked the door to my sensitivity. And then ironically, about a year later, I was asked to lend my talent to a program that had just gotten off the ground called an honor card, if I would create a painting for it, and I did. And the way the honor card worked, with a donation of $5, you would get this card and you'd send it to a friend or a family member. And it says, a gift has been given in your honor to support the needy and homeless in our community. So in 1988, that's when the honor card began. First year, it raised about $53,000. And then over 35 years, the program grew beyond Greensboro to 15 different cities across North Carolina. And not only was it a great, poignant message, but it did generate some funds.
And we can still get involved in that today. So if someone was interested in that, what would they need to do?
Well, after 35 years, I wrote a book about the whole program, but I decided to tack my talent and interest to another plight, and that's affordable housing. So beginning in 2023, I have a new program called the Honor Card, once again, that's dedicated to low-income families with home repairs and affordable housing. And it's aligned with a great organization called Community Housing Solutions. And my goal is to help raise awareness and funds for that direction. So you simply go to thehonorcard.com. And you can get all the information. You can see this year's creation, which is really pretty. It's called Safe Haven. And the theme for these annual honor cards, which will be 2 a year, will be birdhouses as sort of a shelter around those that things that we all seek.
What advice would you share to our audience if you were to summarize a philosophy that has guided your life? In one or two sentences, what would that be?
Well, in the Bible, in the book of James, it talks about coming alongside and helping people. And ideally, it's not about just giving, which is huge and helpful. But the other thing is just talking about it. And oftentimes I've had people come to me asking for some advice. And I just really am pretty straightforward. And I'd say, are you getting your hands dirty? And they said, what do you mean? I said, are you volunteering? Because it's one thing to strike a check and be absent from the participation, but it's not until you come alongside and you hear that person's need, or you see their desire, or you better understand where they stumbled, that you can use something really deeper inside you to affirm and give them some hope out of their hopelessness. And it doesn't take much. For over 30 years, I would go down to the shelter seeking inspiration for the honor card. But it was through those relationships of serving just a simple cup of juice and just pausing or giving them an extra cup of juice. And they thought, oh my gosh, I thought I was only going to get one. But to pause and just to lend an ear. So we all grow up and maybe we don't get our hands dirty, but I would challenge people. That's where I continue to have the best perspective on life.
That's perfect. So I'd love to end each podcast with the same question for every guest. This is called the Honor It Podcast. So what are you choosing to honor today?
I'm fortunate. I have the rare and unique privilege of raising a granddaughter right now. And it's not anything that most grandparents would have ever thought would happen. I have three delightful grandchildren, but it's one thing when you have them and they're with their parents, but to raise them and to go through this second edition once again, it has been such a blessing. Number one, it's been a very challenging, don't get me wrong, because at my age and since my wife's age, Cynthia, to have a 17-year-old under roof girl, it's a real test. My goal is just to honor her and try to be as contemporary in her life and my grandkids, and not just be so removed and backwards. And I'm not saying my grandparents were that way. They were.
Yes.
Trying to be somewhat hip and get clothes that look reasonable.
Well, maybe that's why God has placed that in your life, because you are equipped and He has equipped you to be able to do that.
Yeah.
So
So I hope that was a backdoor answer to your question, but
it was perfect. And that's what it's all about, just what comes up in your mind. And what a perfect note, or should I say, brush stroke, to end this episode. Thank you, William. I really appreciate you for joining us today.
it was my pleasure.
So that completes our episode with William Mangum. Until next time, remember, we are not promised tomorrow, so be present today. It is a gift, and take time to honor it all.